Parshas Toldos deals with the brachos that Yaakov Avinu was given by Yitzchak Avinu when Yaakov Avinu dressed up as being Esav. And the bracha that he was given is V'yiten l'cha Elokim mitel ha-shamayim u'mishvanei ha-aretz. The English in 1b, may Hashem Elokim give you the dew of the heavens and of the fatness of the earth and abundant grain and wine. Rashi and Ve'yiten l'cha Elokim says, what did the Vav come to teach us, the connector? Because beforehand, really, it's a question. Rashi brings us a second interpretation, really wasn't a stated bracha. So Rashi begins as the first interpretation, Ve'yiten l'cha, Hashem will give you, and will give again. Ve'yiten, and will continue to give you. So we need to understand, what is this idea? That Yitzchak Avinu is giving a bracha to Yaakov Avinu, and he says to him, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to give you a blessing, and then he's going to continue to bless him. What is the necessity of having a blessing and then continue to bless him? It's as if the blessing is conditional, and God has to re-bless each and every time. And this is particularly difficult to understand, because when Esav comes in, thinking that he's going to get the blessing, and Yitzchak Avinu says, sorry, somebody dressed up as you, and I've already given him the blessing. And Esav says, but don't you have any blessing left for me? And Yitzchak Avinu gives him the bracha, behold, in 1C 39, of the fatness of the earth shall be your dwelling, and of the dew of the heavens from above, by your sword you shall live, and you will serve your brother, and that's only when your brother is deserving. When he's not deserving, you can throw off the yoke. But here we don't have the idea of netina, of giving. It will be yemo shavecha. It's a stated fact. We don't have by Esav this idea of God will give you the fatness of the land, and will we give you the fatness of the land. It's a given. He will give it to you. How do we understand this idea of giving and re-giving? In order to appreciate the one and a half, two approaches I'd like to take on the last page at the end, I'd like to do a little bit differently. It's to go through a mahalach, to go through a process of trying to understand the whole world views of Yaakov and Esav, the dynamics between Yaakov and Esav starting from birth, and then have an appreciation of why the brachas were given in this particular way. In order to do this, we need to go back to the birth of Yaakov and Esav. And here the birth itself raises quite a number of questions. When we look at the text in 1a, and when her term to bear grew full, then behold, there were two, Amin Bivitana, there were twins in her womb. And the question we have to ask him right here is, what's the purpose of Yaakov and Esav being twins? If there are children that are born as twins, there must be a reason for this. What is the reason Yaakov and Esav Dafka had to be born as twins? The first one emerged red, entirely like a hairy mantle. So they named him Esav. We need to understand, why do we have the description of Esav the way he was born? And Esav is really called, based on how he looked, Asui, fully formed. Is that not a strange name to give a child? And after that, his brother emerged with his hand grasping onto the heel of Esav. So he called his name Yaakov. And this is equally a strain. Why do we need to know the fact that Yaakov Avinu was holding onto the heel of Esav? What significance does this have for us? And even more so, Yaakov Avinu is also called by the event of his birth. Yaakov, heel. Also very, very strange to understand. So we need to also understand, why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had Esav born first and Yaakov afterward? If Yaakov was the one who was destined for the bracha, make him first. Which just begs the overall question of, why was it necessary that Yaakov even had to dress up in order to get the blessings? Why couldn't God have given a Ruach HaKodesh, a divine command to Yitzchak, like he gave the prophecy to Rivka, that Yaakov deserves the blessing and would have saved us all those problems and all this hatred for so many thousands of years? Why was this particularly done in this order, that Esav is first, that Yaakov has to get the blessings in such a trickery type of way? And then we come into the story of how we find that Yaakov one day is simmering a soup a stew, and Esav comes from the field, and he's exhausted, and he asks him to give him some soup, because he's exhausted, and Yaakov says, sell the birthright to me. Equally a very perplexing story. Why do I need to know that Yaakov was making the stew? How is it possible even to sell a birthright, you know? You're the Bechor. You can't say, well, I'm selling my rights to the birthright. This is what you have. This is from moment of birth. How do we explain this? So obviously there's a lot of questions, a lot of difficult things to understand within this particular section. I think to be able to get at least one approach, and obviously there's a tremendous amount that's written about all of these questions, to get some type of understanding. There's a very beautiful Chassam Sofer, the Malbim says likewise, as well as other Mefarshim, quoted in Shvilei Pinchas. The Yisod that we're going to work with, the fundamental principle is, when Yaakov and Esav are born, when Yaakov and Esav are twins, the divine plan, so to speak, the understanding that Yitzchak Avinu had and Rivka Imenu had with the birth of these two children, would be the shutfus, would be the partnership, hamufla'asha yisachar utzvulah. They envisioned a partnership where Esav, who was an ish yodei tzayin, an ish sadeh, a man of the field, would be like the zvulin personality who would go out and work, who would go out into the fields and would be able to sustain and give to Yaakov Avinu, who was going to be the Ishtam Yoshevo Alim, the one sitting in the tents and learning, like Yisachar. Zvulun would be the provider, and Yisachar would be the one learning Torah. That was the original plan. And that's why Esav is the Bechor, that's why Esav is the firstborn. It's very fascinating to note, and this is brought down in Source 6, that both in the brachas of Yaakov Avinu to his children, as well as Moshe Rabbeinu to all the tribes, Zvulun is put before Yisachar. And Moshe Rabbeinu's bracha is Smach Zvulun b'tseisecha v'Yisachar bo'alecha. Yisvulun, the provider, is put first because of the chashivos, the importance of being the one who is sustaining the Amudah Torah. And likewise, Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrachi in Source 7 notes that we find in Parshas Pegudei that the Shulchan is put before the menorah into the Mishkan, because the Shulchan, which represents the bread, which represents the sustenance, is the portion of Zvulun. And the menorah, which represents Chochmah, which represents wisdom, is the portion of Yisachar. And when it comes to being able to implement, it's the table, it's the sustenance before the wisdom. And just parenthetically, we find this as well, the Lekach Valibov notes, if we hold that each of the months of the year corresponds to the different Shvati, and there are two different counts, one is in order of birth, and the more common one is in the order of the way they traveled. Therefore, Yehuda being corresponding to the month of Nisan, Yisachar, who traveled next, corresponding to the month of Iyar, and then Zvulun, the provider, corresponds to the month of Sivan, the month wherein we receive the Torah. And the reason for this is very simple. On one level, the reason for this is to be able to sit and learn Torah, and where your focus is totally in Avodas Hashem, is much easier than being out in the workplace, being a Zvulun, who's out L'chof Yamin Yishkon, who's out with the ships and who's in the trade market. To be able to be have the focus throughout your day that you're here in order to support people who are learning, that your focus is not only on Olam Hazeh, on the physical world, but the physical world is a means to an end, is a far greater challenge. And the ability to share your money and to recognize what the value of money is all about and put your priorities in the correct order is a far greater challenge. And therefore, since this is a tremendous chutz to be able to support those who are involved in Torah, Al Kain, the end of age, Zocha, Lios, HaBachor, Livale, Lifnei Yaakov, Kedarko, Shel Zvulun, Shigdimo, Moshe. Therefore, Esav was meant to be the Bachor. He has the position of Zvulun, and Yaakov was only born afterward. What was the, and indeed, when Esav comes out to this world, suddenly something changes.
and we can't, you know, be able to quantify it. But at that moment, says the Shri Lei Pinchas at 9, when he comes to the Avir HaOlam, when he's actually in the world of the Gashmias, he leaves the world of the Ruchmias, something changes. And that is why when Esav, you know, hits earth and hits the Gashmias, Yaakov, realizing that Esav isn't going to hold through to his deal, holds on this level to his heel, trying to prevent him and saying, no, if you're not going to hold on to this, let me be the Bechor. And that's on one symbolism, Yaakov holding on to the heel of Esav. But if indeed this is why they are twins, that they should work together, and Esav should be the provider, and therefore he's born first. So ask the Shvi Pinchas in source number 10, Akash Baruch, who knew that Esav wasn't going to fulfill his role. So why indeed does he make him the Bechor? So he notes in source number 11 that in the future times, perhaps Esav has not yet lived up to it, but in the times of the Mashiach, it's going to be the righteous people among Esav. So Pasuk in Yeshayahu describes, V'amdu zarim ru'u sonechem, that strangers will shepherd your sheep. Ultimately, this is going to be the vision where Esav is going to be the ones working and providing for the Yaakov to sit in the Ola Shel Torah and the tents of Torah. Having said this, that our vision is for the two of them to work together, but this vision didn't come into fruition. The question we have to ask ourselves is, what went wrong? There must have been something in utero. There must be something within the makeup of Esav that he decides when he comes to this world that this partnership is not for him. And here, the Sefer Vayomer Yehuda, a Rav from Tellstone, notes a very fascinating insight into the personality of Yaakov and Esav, and it's really based on a Medrash we're all familiar with. The Medrash tells us at the bottom paragraph in 12, on the Pasuk Rashi brings down, Vayitrotzitzu habanim bekirba, that the boys struggled within her, that Shayu mirivim al bet olamos haolam hazeh v'olam haba. What were they struggling with? Why were they, you know, in a struggle mode? They were arguing over sharing these two worlds, olam hazeh, this physical world, and olam haba, the spiritual world. So the question they ask, and it's such a basic question that sometimes, you know, we're so used to midrashim that we've grown up with on such a young age that we don't even think twice. He asks a very basic question on this medrash. He says, Nicha, it makes sense that Yaakov Avinu wants both worlds. But why would Esav be arguing about Olam Haba? Why is Esav interested? If Esav, we see immediately when he comes out into this world, has no interest in spirituality, has no interest in supporting Torah, what happened in the womb that even Esav having a thought of, yes, I want Olam Haba, I'm not ready to give it to you so fast. What was Esav's interest in this ruchnius, in this spirituality? And here he describes in a very beautiful description in source number 13. He says, Yaakov Avinu Olav HaShalom, in the asterisk in 13, She'ibedet Olam HaZeh L'tzarech Olam Haba. Yaakov Avinu wanted this physical world in order to be able to reach the Olam Haba, in order to be able as a way to get into the next world. You need to eat, you need to do mitzvahs, you need to be involved in the physical world, but it's only hechei timsi, it's only a medium to be able to acquire reward in the future world. The cholmashenenem olam hazeh hayakidei latet lo koach lavadat Hashem v'lusarach olam haba. The hana, the enjoyment in this world, the physical pleasures of this world, are in order to gain strength to serve Hashem better and to be able to gain and glean the gifts of the next world. And that was Yaakov Avinu. He elevated this world for the next world. Great. Where was Esav? So explains the Ilu Esav in the next paragraph. Shibeid et olam haba bishvil olam hazeh. Esav is the exact opposite. He used the next world in order to get him farther in this world. And therefore, if he did a mitzvah in this world, it was in order for him to gain prestige, in order for people to honor him. His whole focus and mindset was this world. Why did he honor his father? And which is a tremendous ruchnius thing to write. The rabbis describe how the honor of Esav to his father was exemplary. but he did it in order to be able to gain the brachos, the blessings from his father. And that's why his anguish was so great. It wasn't for Ruchnia's sake alone. It wasn't in order that he should be able to get a larger portion in the next world. His focus wasn't the next world. He's involved in the spiritual aspect of this world in order to further this world, in order to gain more of this world. And that is why, when Yaakov Avinu tells him, sell me my birthright, and he hears that, you know, if he doesn't serve the birthright correctly, he may die. He says, I want to live in this world. Who needs a spirituality if it's going to cost me this world? And if it means selling my birthright for a momentary pleasure in this world, it is a deal that makes sense. Because my focus is on this world. My focus is, how can I get a greater amount of this world? And he ends this essay in source 17. What we learn from here is how a person has to be careful that chas v'shalom their mitzvahs shouldn't be in order to get honor or pleasure in this world. That's the way of Esau. That when I do a mitzvah, it's not in order that I should get, you know, larger portion now. And if I don't, you know, get what I think I deserve, I have complaints, I have arguments against Hashem. No. Yaakov Avinu is going vertical. His life is about, how do I achieve spirituality? Esav's whole focus is, how do I achieve physicality? His life is a horizontal life. And this, my friends, explains why Esav is unable to hold by the Yisachar Zvulun relationship. He says, how do you expect me to take my hard-earned money and support you? Then it's going to take away from my pleasures. It's going to take away from my resources. I'm not interested in that ultimate goal of serving Torah scholars to get a portion in the world to come, because my focus is down here. And anything that's going to take me away from that focus, I have absolutely no interest in. My friends, this is a struggle that we all struggle with, whether we're Esav or whether we're Yaakov. We live in a physical world. We live in a physical world as religious, spiritual people. And the two very often come into conflict. And the challenge in life is to be able to see that, yes, there's pleasures in this world. And yes, there is beautiful things in this world. But are we going to get so stuck in this world that we can't move beyond this world? Perhaps an extreme example, and I grant you it's extreme. Most of us don't live within the extremes, but extremes help us clarify on the spectrum where we do hold. Rav Nachum Seltzer tells a story in his book, Moments, of a certain young man who is the youngest of four brothers, who at the age of 23 passes his accounting exams. And his older brother, who was older than him by quite a bit, calls him from Switzerland, where the other three brothers, who are all substantially older, were living, and they had, were already wealthy and owned a bank there. And they said, congratulations on your becoming an accountant. We'd like to hire you as the head of the accounting department of our bank. And yes, we know you're 23, but we want you to join the family business, and you'll be set for life. So he said thank you very much to his brother. But he also said, I can't accept this job. What do you mean you can't accept this job? This is a job that, you know, is, you know, no 23-year-old yet. It's handed on a silver platter. So he tries to explain nicely. He says, your bank is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's Shabbos. I can't work on Shabbos. I've made a commitment not to work on Shabbos. And his brother screams at him. And he says, for Shabbos, you're going to give up everything. I am handing you a life of wealth and luxury that you're never going to have to worry. We are an established bank. We are very wealthy. You'll have everything you want. And you're going to give that up for Shabbos? And he says, yes. And his brother says, don't you ever call me to beg me when you're out of money, because I'm not going to help you. and I never want to speak to you again, and slams down the phone. Many, many years later, this younger brother gets a phone call, and it's this older brother. And the older brother says, I'm dying, I'm on my last days, and I'd like to see you before I die. Would you mind coming to visit me? So the younger brother says, sure. And he gets on a plane, he goes to Switzerland, and the story describes how the chauffeur comes to pick him up and how they drive an hour from the airport, and it's an estate that looks like a mansion with well-tended gardens and beautiful house and the chandelier and the maid and the plush carpets. And there's nothing wrong with this. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with this. And it goes into his brother's bedroom, which has been turned into a hospital room. And he sees his brother lying on the bed in this canopied bed. And he goes over and he says, oh, it's been so long. Yes, way too long. He says, catch me up. And he says, no, first you catch me up. So the brother who's lying on the bed says, I had three children. Two died before their time. They had everything they needed, and they abused it. And the third one is living off in Hawaii, and I don't even know what type of life she's living. Tell me about your children. And the younger brother says, I also have three children. And he takes out a picture. He says, this is the first child. He's the Rav of a Chashuva congregation, and here's a picture of his children and his grandchildren. And then he takes out a second picture. He says, my second son is a Rosh Yeshiva, and he has a picture of his family and his yeshiva. And a third picture of a daughter, Kenai Nahara, has a large family. And the brother is silent. And then he looks up and he says from his dying bed, he said, you won. And he asks his butler, please bring me my pen. You know, it's this whole ceremony where, you know, the mahogany and the ivory and, you know. And he takes out his pen and he asks his butler, give me a checkbook. And he says, I want to buy into your company. How much will it cost me to buy into your company? Yes, he has all the material wealth that a person could ever imagine. Yes, there is something beautiful about the Olam Hazeh. But when push comes to shove, where are our priorities in life? What is meaningful in life? What's going to bring a person ultimate nachas? And I'll just add, before moving on, a woman this morning, when I taught in Ramat Eshkol, came over to me afterwards and told me, much more simplistic level, we're talking about a young woman who's in Shiduchim, and this who I know, and this woman was telling me, she says, you don't realize how special this girl's mother is. It's a family who were not committed to Yiddishkeit, but the girl wanted to go to yeshiva. So the mother hired herself out as a babysitter in order to be able to have the money that the girl could go to yeshiva, and she worked many jobs to support her daughter. And this woman, who was the person this mother worked for, said, this babysitter once told me that a very wealthy person said to them, why are you working so many jobs? Move to my community. You'll send your kids to school for free. You don't need the yeshiva education. You'll do much better. And she said, the bottom line is, this guy who made this offer, it doesn't have to be this way. I understand. In this case, this guy's daughter is with earrings and drugs and has no nachas. And this girl, who's a student of mine, who the mother, mamish, did everything she could for her daughter, is one of the most beautiful Benos Yisrael you can imagine on every, ruchnius, begashmius, in every way you can imagine. This is what we have to ask ourselves. Where are our priorities? Where are we going? And this, my friends, when Yaakov Avinu saw that Esav was only involved in this world, his whole focus was only in the Olam Hazeh, Yaakov Avinu understood that he was going to have to take the mantle of both Yisachar and Zvulun on him. And that's why it's no wonder in 23 that what is Yaakov Avinu doing when Esav comes from the field? He's making a stew. He's the one providing the food. And that's what Yaakov Avinu says, if I'm going to be providing the food and I'm going to be cooking and I'm going to be giving, then I'm taking on Yisachar and Zvulun together. We don't even need your job, Esav. And therefore, at that moment when he sells the birthright, Yaakov and Esav become one, and that is in Yaakov. The Yisachar Zvulun partnership that was envisioned enters together into one persona. I'll just add here parenthetically, which is not halachic, but a very interesting hashkafic piece. The Meostesha points out in source 18, how is it possible for Esav at this juncture to sell his Bechora? So he offers, he says, that the boys were born as twins. And born as twins, they were born really together, beleida achas, in one birth. And the birth didn't end with Esav, ki machare seito shel Yaakov. But rather, when Yaakov was holding on to the heel of Esav, like being dragged along there, right, at birth, what he's saying is it's one long birth. Again, this is not halachic, but it's an interesting hashkafic idea. Therefore, he contends that Yaakov and Esav were really shutfus. They were really, had a shutfus, they had a partnership in the Bechora, that they were both two halves of the oldest son. Esav and Yaakov were born almost, it's like, you know, together, as one. And therefore, what Yaakov Avinu asked from Esav, is he says, I want to buy you out. I want to buy your share. And that's pshat in source number 19, where he says, Mechra kayom et bechoretcha. Sell today your bechora, which means your chelek, your portion. Why kayom? So he notes that just like the day originally was be'er buvya, day and night, light and darkness function together. And God had to make a separation between the day, the light and the day, and the dark and the night. Michra Kayom says Yaakov to Esav, our existence is an erbuvia, is a mess. We need to make a clear distinction. One of us will have the rights to the eldest, one of us will function in this way, and one of us will not. And it's at this moment that Yaakov Avinu takes on both the persona of Yaakov and Esav in the sense that he has the job, the partnership that was originally envisioned, and that is the supporter of Torah as well as the one who learns Torah, the Yisachar Zvulun relationship. Now, why this is so critical, my friends, is for what happens in the next week's parsha, but let's take a peek on the next page. We know that the Medrash tells us that it was said, it was like known, Rivka had two sons, Lavan had two daughters, the oldest to the oldest, the youngest to the youngest. Leah Imenu being the oldest will marry Yaakov, and Rachel Imenu being the youngest will marry Esav, and Rachel will marry Yaakov. And the Medrash tells us that Leah would stand in Parshas Drachim. She would stand on the crossroad and ask, what is the nature of my future husband? And they told her he's Melaste Metabriot. He's robbing people and he's a terrible person. And Leah would cry over her destiny. So on this, in the Sefer we've mentioned before, Va'at Alida Kulana, and this essay is primarily based on Rav Goldsvich, Zatzal, who's the Rashiva of Karen B'Yavne. He says, what's pshat in this medrash? What does it mean that Leah's going out to the crossroads? Leah Imenu, and this is source number 26 and 27, Leah Imenu understood that Esav's job is a much more challenging job than Yaakov. In the language of Goldvich, Esav's job is mibachutz, is to work in the outer world, to come to the bifnim, to come to the inner world. And Yaakov Avinu's job was from bifnim, from the inner world, to go to the outer world. And Leah went on the crossroads, which is a symbolism of went out there, out in the world where Esav was, and said, how is Esav doing? This is a much more challenging job. That's why Rachel didn't have to check out of Yaakov Avinu. And when she was told what Esav was up to, Leah had two options. She could daven for Esav, or she could give up and daven that she would marry Yaakov. When she saw that Yaakov Avinu gave up on Esav, that Yaakov took the bracha in Esav's place, that Yaakov took on the both roles, Leah understood that she only had one recourse, was to daven that she would marry Yaakov as well. And this, my friends, explains in our parsha in source 28, the Sfasemes, Nir'el l'va'er ha'inyan api mashakatu b'medrash. Leah heard and cried. Avinu lava shalom. Yaakov Avinu got the portion of Esav. And that is why it was truthful when he says, Anochi Esav Bechorecha. When Yaakov Avinu dresses up in Esav's garment and says to his father, I am Esav, what Yaakov Avinu is saying, says the Sfat Emet, is that originally I was an Esav. Originally I was Yaakov Yoshev Oli. But when Esav decided that he only wanted this world and he wasn't focused on utilizing this world, which is what our challenge is, take the wealth, take the fancy, whatever it is, but raise it, elevate it, utilize it for the ruchnias. When Yaakov Avinu saw that Esav was not interested in doing this, he therefore took on Esav's role, and that is symbolized by the garments that were put on Yaakov. Esav's garments is symbolic of that he took upon him Esav's role, and it's dafka on the hands, which is the aspect of doing, of going out, of building, of the zvulun aspect. And therefore, when he says, Esav is your eldest son, he's not lying. I am Esav, your oldest son. I have taken on that quality, that ability to serve in the part, in the role that was envisioned for Esav. And this explains why Yaakov Avinu, who's now Yaakov Avinu and Esav, marries two wives. And why Yaakov Avinu inherently, intrinsically loves Rachel more than Leah. Because Rachel is his soulmate from the aspect of Yaakov Avinu, who he is intrinsically. Leah is somebody that he got almost afterwards. When he took on the role of Esav, he took on the secondary aspect as well. Which, by the way, explains the Medrash, that when Yaakov Avinu married Leah thinking it's Rachel, and he wakes up in the morning and there's Leah. So Medrash says, Yaakov said to her, how could you fool me? How could you trick me? And Leah's response is, basically, I learned from you. Did you not say to your father, Yaakov asked her, how could you answer when I said Rachel and you answered? How could you have done that? And she said, well, how did you answer to your father when he said Esav? And you answered, yes, it's me. What Leah's basically saying is, the moment that you answered that you are Esav, at that moment, you deserve to get me. And now I am destined to be your wife. The fascinating thing, which we'll note here, and that is in 29, that just like Yaakov Avinu took on two roles, Yaakov and Esav in one person, likewise Rachel Imenu could have taken on two roles as well, of being a Rachel and a Leah. And just like Yaakov has two dimensions, Rachel Imenu could have two dimensions. And this is where the tefillah of Leah and the tears and the crying of Leah changed that destiny. The tears of Leah allowed her, instead of being married to somebody else, to have the schus to be the partner of the Esav aspect of Yaakov in this marriage. That Rachel didn't take on two personas. She was Rachel to Yaakov and Leah to Esav aspect of Yaakov. Perhaps in Yirtzeh Hashem next week in Parsha Vayetze we'll develop this and the implications of this, but let's leave this for now. So now, my friends, we understand that Yaakov Avinu is taking on both roles of Esav and Yaakov in terms of the Yisachar Zvulun relationship. But we would be remiss if we did not add one more component. And that is when Yaakov Avinu takes on the Esav role. And really, he's taking on this Esav role from birth. It's at that moment of birth, when Esav hits this world, that he's drawn immediately, on whatever symbolic level, to the physicality of this world. That Yaakov Avinu not only has to take on the role of Esav in terms of the Yisachar Zvulun relationship, but it's an entire picture where Yaakov has to take on the persona of Esav as well and be able to take the qualities of Esav and be able to work them through and be able to channel them for Avodas Hashem. And this is a beautiful piece from the Shvilei Pinchas. It's a Hasidic piece, and I think it has a tremendous amount of insight to offer us. He says in source number 32, again, one of our original questions, Why was it necessary to have all these details of Yaakov Avinu holding onto the heel of Esav? What do we learn from this? He says, V'yesh Loma, 32, Shekasher achaz Yaakov be'ekev Esav. When Yaakov Avinu held onto the heel of Esav, Yanak Yaakov derech ekev Esav mechelek harachibo. Yaakov Avinu drew down into his hand the aspect of the negativity of Esav. V'ilu, simultaneous with this, Esav yanak derech yado shel Yaakov shechzah b'ikvo mechelek hatov shebo. But at the same moment, Yaakov Avinu was able to inject into Esav's heel his Kedusha. That Esav has the potential to take this Kedusha and run with it. But he doesn't. Nimsa, ki le Yaakov Esav haita bechira gemura livchor b'ra'u b'to. Both Yaakov and Esav have within them parts of good and parts of evil to struggle with. And that is why Yaakov Avinu has to take on this negative element of Esav, this element of struggling in this world with rishus, with negativity, and to be miskaber and to overcome. And this is one of the reasons why, in source number 33, the Yismach Moshe points out that unlike Avraham Avinu, we don't call Avram anymore, we only call Abraham, Yaakov Avinu, his name is changed to Yisrael, we call him both Yaakov Avinu as well as Yisrael. What's the difference? The asterisk in 33, Lefichach lo ratza, Kadosh Baruch Hu, says the Yismach Moshe, Lakor shem Yaakov legamrei. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want the name Yaakov to be rescinded completely. Because this indeed is the greatness of Yaakov. The Yaakov, the Ekev, and its name reflects this, is the greatness of Yaakov. That he's able to take that which he got, the negativity from the heel of Esav, and he's able to be miskaver, he's able to overcome, he's able to take the temptations and channel them for the service of God. And this is a beautiful Hasidic pshat in 34, says the Yitav Lev. When Yaakov Avinu meets Esav in Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov Avinu is offered by Esav, come walk with me. And Yaakov's response is, Yavorna Adoni Lufnei Avodo, you go ahead. Vani enalaliti, and I will go according to my slow pace. Leregel hamlacha asher lefanai, literally mean to the feet of my malacha, of my sheep, what I work with that are with me, and then I'll meet you in Seir. But on a deeper level, what he's saying is, I have to separate from you because leregel hamlacha asher lefanai, because I have a great job in front of me. Of the regel, of taking that foot, that experience of the negativity I got from your heel, that I have to work on in order to be able to get to meet you by Mashiach's time. It's going to be a process to rid that evil completely. That contact from your heel is going to take a long time. And this is why he mentions the Shvilei Pinchas in 35. That we have some of the halachas on a symbolic level. Let's say, netil siyadayim, washing our hands before bread. So it's almost like we're washing our hands from the hand that held on to Esav's heel. From all the impurity in this world before we're involved in Kedusha and the holy act of eating, we want to wipe away all the impurity, all the negativity, all the taints of the physicality of this world. And likewise, he says, the idea of the mitzvah of staka, which makes so much sense because this is the challenge of the Yisachar and Zvulun. Do you support somebody? Do you utilize your money correctly? Do you have a sense of the gashmias, that it's the physicality is here for a higher purpose? The Torah tells us, lo ta'ameitza levavcha, don't harden your heart, velo tikpos et yadecha, don't close your hand from your brother, the poor person. Ki patoach tiftach et yadcha lo, open up your hands. The understanding of opening up your hands is recognize that these hands have the potential to be closed. They've been tainted by the Esav mentality. Open up your hands. Don't be closed to your brother. Support the stucca. Be able to become a Yaakov Avinu and be able to overcome and be able to have that Yisachar Zvulun relationship. I'll just note an interesting point that he makes in 36, that not only is this true about Yaakov Avinu, it's also true by Esau. We know that there are four animals, the Torah tells us, that have either one or the other of the signs of kashrut. Either they chew their cud, or they have split hooves. And each one of those animals correspond to a different nation that rules over us. The pig, which chews his cud, but which does not chew his cud, but has split hooves, the pig is representative of Edom, of Esav, and there's a lot of Torah on it. But one of the things that our rabbis speak about is that the pig, you know, puts out its foot. You know, when it lies down, its foot is out, it's prominent. And it's a symbol of saying, like, look, I have split hooves. So according to this, it makes sense, because the hoof is the ekev, it's the heel. Esav is saying, yeah, look at my heel, I'm holy. But it's only the external, that's the outward, that he's showing that he's holy. It's only the physicality of this world, but when you get down inside, there's no idea of Kedusha, there's no idea of Tara within him. It's just the foot, which has that remnants of Yaakov Avinu holding on to his heel. Now, with this understanding, that Yaakov Avinu is both Yaakov and Esav, both in the Yisachar Zvulun relationship, supporting Torah and learning Torah, and Yaakov is both Yaakov and Esav, and having the negativity in him, and he's able to overcome it, we can now appreciate the names given to both Yaakov and Esav. If we take a look at the Sefer, the treasure within, in 38, he says, why were these names given to them in this way? So he says, 39, when the Torah refers to Yoshua as a nar, although he was already middle-aged, it was by way of praise. He never lost his youthful thirst for improvement, which resulted in never leaving the tent of his Rebbe. It was this quality which enabled him to become the worthy successor of Moshe Rabbeinu. Yaakov Avinu, too, practiced this approach throughout his life. His very name was derived from the word ekev, a heel, which is the lowest part of the body and represents the idea of inadequacy. He always felt that he was still on the bottom rung of the ladder and needed to climb higher. Hence, he was a Yoshev Oli, moving from one citadel of learning to the other in search of truth without any semblance of smugness. This is the Ekev, the heel. I'm way on the bottom. I constantly have to move up. On the other hand, Esav was born with a different nature. He came into a world already covered in hair as if fully grown. This physical appearance betrayed the attitude of someone who felt accomplished and complete. This fit in with his name, Esav, from the word Asui. And there's a lot of Torah. The Shele Pinchas points out the Asui, the Yud of Asui, comes into the Ekev to make it Yaakov, and that relationship, which is a whole different shear, which means made in a finished product, not only physically, but also in its opinionated outlook. He felt no need to seek improvement or to grow, and this conceit eroded his whole being. And this is perhaps why Yaakov Avinu holds on to his heel to say, let me teach you a bit of humility. The names Yaakov and Esav, and why the Torah goes through the detail of their birth and how they were born, is a reflection of their essence. As we know, names are the essence. Esav is Asui, fully made, complacent. And Yaakov is heel, I have yet to grow, I have more to learn. And my friends, the question that we have to ask ourselves on this level, as we asked ourselves by the Yisachar Zvulun relationship, is which part of us do we make part of our character? The Esav Asui smugness or the Yaakov Ekev constantly growing? Rabbi Friend, and listen to your messages, he points out in source number 42 that change is a difficult thing. If you ask most American rabbis, even the best congregation, to identify the most serious problem they face with their congregations, most will tell you that it's getting people to accept changes. After all, they learn Daf Yomi, they send their children to the finest schools, they come to shul 3 times a day. What more could you possibly want from them? They just want to be left alone. Most people are guilty of an extremely serious sin, which the Torah describes as Shalom Yehli Ki Bishrirus Li Bielech. Loosely translated means, I'm fine, leave me alone. The Chazon Ish calls someone who displays this attitude a Benoni Bishita, a person who deliberately chooses to be mediocre as a matter of principle. But life is not like that. There's no standing still in life, not when it comes to Ruchnius. And that's what Yaakov Avinu told us. Behold, the ladder is standing on the ground, his top reaches the heavens. The commentators see in these words that life is like a ladder. Either you go up or you go down, but you can never remain stagnant. And this is why Adam HaRishon, the altar of Slobodka, notes, is called Adam, the asterisk of 43, because a human being is essentially like the ground. You put things in the ground, they grow, you work, you hoe, you till, you fertilize, you prune, you harvest and plant again. That's the nature of the ground. A human being is the same. His whole life is a continuous cycle of effort and growth, a constant battle that never ends. This, my friends, has to be our challenge. Are we on a growth-oriented path? You know, I remember when we were living in L.A., Baruch Hashem, things were going very well. I remember that my husband and I looked at each other at one point and said, we're stagnant. We're not growing. We're not moving. There's something missing here. Yes, everything's going well. And yes, you're involved in a Baruch Hashem. But there has to be more. And it was interesting because my first trip back to L.A., after we made Aliyah, I asked one of my friends, I said, so tell me what's new? And they answered me, nothing. And I turned to them, I said, that's the problem. That's why we left. Nothing's new. But everything's new. The world is new. We're new. Life is new. We're missing that feeling of newness, of vitality, of change. This is our challenge. Our challenge is, do we feel the AKF, the heel, that life is about progressing, moving, growing? Or do we have the smugness of Esav? I preached it. My kids are settled. My life is settled. Life is okay. I'm just going to go on the same track. You know, like the records I used to grow up with. You know, when the needle was broken or the record was broken, it would play the same track over and over again. How many of us, I know it's like an example I can't even give to my students today, right? Records, took my DVDs, you're like, what's going on here? But we understand the model, that song. We've heard it, we've all had those broken records over and over again. How many of us are leading lives like that broken record? There's a Gvaldik Vort in the Michtam Eliyahu. On the Pasuk, the last Pasuk in Hosea, Ki Yisharim Darchei Hashem, Sadikim Yelchubam, Uposhlim Yikashlubam. The ways of Hashem are straight. Righteous people will walk on them, and wicked people will stumble on them. Says Rav Dessler in one of the most beautiful pieces. He says, what are Darchei Hashem in 45? Heim Drochav Binaguto, Kefi Shenitnu Lanu Lasigo. The ways of Hashem are the Hashkocha Pratis that Hashem puts in our lives. It's everything that we process in our, what we see, what we hear, who we encounter. Everything is Shluchei Hashem Hema. They're all messengers from Hashem. Ulashem Limud Nitnu Lanu, and we're here to learn from them. And what's the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha? Tzaddikim yachubam will walk on them on the same path as opposed to yikashlubam, it's the same path. People who are growth-oriented will look at the experiences in life and say, how can I grow from them? How can I learn from them? How can I do that cheshbon nefesh we spoke about last week? And the wicked people will be completely oblivious to all that's going around them. They're in their small little world, and all they care about is their small little world. The challenge is to be able to grow. It's to be able to change. It's to be able not to have this complacency and this apathy, which affects so much of our lives. And with this, my friends, if we just summarize everything we've seen now, we can now come back to my original question on the last page. Emerging worlds, Yaakov and Esav are two emerging worlds. in the womb, they're arguing about this world and the next world. Yaakov sees this world as a means. Enjoy this world, but elevate it to the next world. The goal is the next world. Esav sees the goal as this world. He'll take the ruchnias of the next world in order to enhance this world. Yaakov Avinu, therefore, that original envisioned plan of being Yisachar and Zvulun, the supporter of Torah and the learner of Torah, takes on both roles together, and therefore marries both Rachel and Leah because he takes on both personas. But he doesn't only take on that role, he takes on the negativity of Esav. When he holds on to his heel, he takes on, he is Yonek, he draws into him the negativity of Esav, and that's what Yaakov's name is about. It's about struggle. Yes, moving forward in life is about struggle. It means that you have challenges in life that you're not able necessarily to know how to deal with. And that's scary, and that's difficult. But that's the Yaakov holding on to the Akev of Esav. The only way we can grow is to challenge ourselves, is to be able to overcome, is to be able to fight those difficulties. And Esav rather be the Asui, the ready-made person. Both of them are twins. It's the same path. Sadiqim Yelchubam Uposlim Yikashlubam. They're twins. They're coming from the same womb. Two people can have the exact same experience in life. Two people can sit and listen to this exact shiur. One can walk away and say, wow, I was inspired. I'm ready to rethink. I'm ready to do A, B, or C. And another one can say, didn't speak to me at all. It's the same shiur. It's the same person giving it. But we respond where we are at in life. We have that choice. That is our bechira. With this in mind, that the challenge is to break out of the apathy and the complacency. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, knowing this, gave the bracha to Yaakov Avinu in this specific way. And both the Lev Shalom and the Nei Yisrael Rav Belsky will do both. Basic bottom line is the same, but they just develop it a little bit differently. Explains Rav Shradron in the Lev Shalom. He says, why do you have all this convoluted way that Yaakovino has to dress up and get the brachos, etc.? He says the reason perhaps is because the Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give Yitzchak the opportunity to bless Esav, that if Yaakov Avinu does not do his part, Yaakov Avinu is going to lose his bracha. If Yitzchak Avinu knew from the start that Yaakov was going to get both bracha, the V'yitein Lecha Elokim Yital Shamai, the bracha really of Zvula, and the Birkas Avos, the bracha of Avraham Avinu, of the bracha of Yisachar, if he knew that Yaakov was going to get both and Esav would get neither, then there would be a clear split between Yaakov and Esav and world history would be different. But Hashem didn't want Yitzchak Avinu to know this, to have the two brothers once again in like the womb-like experience intertwined with each other. Vayitzitzu, that there'll be a constant struggle. And this is in order for Yaakov Avinu to keep on learning. You have an Esav breathing down his back, that any time we slip up, Esav is going to be able to take a rulership over us, which is going to be our prod to go back to the growth and the Torah-oriented life we need to live. The irony is that the original plan that Yitzchak Avinu, Rivka Imenu envisioned of Yisachar and Zvulun didn't happen. Yaakov became Yisachar and Zvulun. But there was a partnership that they didn't envision that did happen. Where now the partnership is that if Yaakov Avinu isn't worthy of this job of to be a Yisachar Zvulun, to be the conduit of God's light in this world, that Esav is going to create that darkness where Yaakov Avinu is going to have to find that light and re-emerge as an Akev, as a heel, in a growth-oriented way. The way Rav Belsky explains it, he says that there's a difference between the Jews and the non-Jews. In the Temple 51, second paragraph, Shlomo HaMelech asks that Hashem treat the prayers of Jews and non-Jews differently. A Jew should be only answered if he merits it, but a Gentile should always be answered. This is the idea in Yonah, and they called out to God with force. If they do not get what they think is fitting, they have complaints. And that is why Esav is God, and behold, your dwelling place will be the fattest of the land. He is given the beautiful peninsula of Italy. This is Esav's habitat. It will remain fertile and productive all of his days. But in 52, a Jew, on the other hand, recognizes his responsibility to do what is right. And the event that his prayer is not fulfilled, he will automatically understand that it's he who is lacking, not Hashem. A Jew must constantly strive to earn the blessing of the Ribono Shel Olam. And each individual is periodically examined to see if he is indeed still worthy of the blessing he receives. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah records a four-way debate on how frequently these examinations take place. Once a year, once a day, every hour, or every minute. A Jew has no guarantee that just because he received a blessing yesterday, he'll receive it again today. Yitain v'yachzer v'yisei. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give and give again. Each time according to the merit of the recipient. That's the greatest blessing that Yitzhak Avinu could give to Yaakov. That's not a one-time blessing which Esav gets. It's dependent on where you are. Because to be a Yaakov or B'nai Yisrael, B'nai Yaakov, means that we constantly have to deserve the blessings that we get. We constantly have to be growing and not to be stagnant. This blessing was tailor-made for Yaakov to ensure that he keeps striving for the highest levels. And the Vilna Gaon notes in 59 and 54 that all the blessings that the Jewish people ever received and will ever receive are included in Yitzchak's bracha to Yaakov. However, we must be deserving of the brachos in order to receive their full bracha and the full benefit. This is similar to a person approaches a tzaddik for a bracha and later complains the blessing went unfulfilled. Kadosh Baruch Hu pours his infinite bounty into the world at all times. But in order to benefit from the blessing, we must make ourselves a kli, a vessel to receive what he's giving. The capacity of our vessel to receive is proportional to the amount of mitzvos, the ma'asim tovim, good deeds that we perform, and the Torah that we learn. Therefore, to fully merit the great blessings that have the root in Yitzchak's original bracha to Yaakov, we have to continually work to ensure that we are fit to receive them. And that, my friend, is in a sense the greatest bracha. The bracha that Hashem is continually watching over us. The bracha that Hashem ensures that we're always on a level of working on ourselves. That the first command to Avraham Avinu, to the first Jew, of Lech Lecha, is the command that echoes in our lives every day. Lech, walk, go. It's about movement. Don't ever be stagnant. Don't ever stay in one place. And therefore, my friends, the emerging worlds, the title of today's shiur, is really not only about Yaakov and Esav, it's about you and me. Each and every one of us is a world in our own right. And we need to be worlds that are emerging at every moment, that we're growing at every moment, that we're changing, that when we look back at yesterday, I'm a different person today. I'm a different person 5 years ago, and I'm even a different person 5 minutes ago. To be able to take the different blessings, the different gifts, the different life situations that Hashem gives me, and instead of closing my eyes and my ears, I open myself up to the people I meet, to the encounters that I have, and say, how can I grow from this encounter? How can I become a better person? Whether it's a positive encounter or a negative encounter, could I be nicer? Could I be more sensitive? Is it about being the Yaakov, who's the Akev, who's constantly involved in growth? And the bracha I leave all of us with is that we should merit the bracha of Yaakov Avinu that he received from Yitzchak Avinu. Of v'yitein l'chalukim, yachzor v'yitein, that Hashem will give and repeat giving, that we should constantly be the kalim, the vessels, the vehicles to receive the brachos, like Yaakov Avinu, always growth-oriented, and that Hashem should continue to bless us with a tremendous amount of shefa bracha.